Part 1. Chapter 1. The One Boy Insurgency. In the pre-dawn darkness of August 26, 1929, in the back bedroom of a small house in Torrance, California, a 12-year-old boy sat up in bed listening. There was a sound coming from outside, growing ever louder. It was a huge, heavy rush, suggesting immensity, a great parting of air. It was coming from directly above the house. The boy swung his legs off his bed, raced down the stairs, slapped open the back door, and loped onto the grass. The yard was otherworldly, smothered in unnatural darkness, shivering with sound. The boy stood on the lawn beside his older brother, head thrown back, spellbound. The sky had disappeared. An object that he could see only in silhouette, reaching across a massive arc of space, was suspended low in the air over the house. It was longer than 2.5 football fields and as tall as a city. It was putting out the stars. What he saw was the German dirigible Graf Zeppelin. At nearly 800 feet long and 110 feet high, it was the largest flying machine ever crafted. More luxurious than the finest airplane, gliding effortlessly over huge distances, built on a scale that left spectators gasping, it was, in the summer of 29, the wonder of the world. The airship was 3 days from completing a sensational feat of aeronautics, circumnavigation of the globe. The journey had begun on August 7th when the Zeppelin had slipped its tethers in Lakehurst, New Jersey, lifted up with a long, slow sigh, and headed for Manhattan. On Fifth Avenue that summer, demolition was soon to begin on the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, clearing the way for a skyscraper of unprecedented proportions, the Empire State Building. At Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, players were debuting numbered uniforms. Lou Gehrig wore number 4. Babe Ruth, about to hit his 500th home run, wore number 3. On Wall Street, stock prices were racing toward an all-time high. After a slow glide around the Statue of Liberty, the Zeppelin banked north, then turned out over the Atlantic. In time, land came below again. France, Switzerland, Germany. The ship passed over Nuremberg, where fringe politician Adolf Hitler, whose Nazi party had been trounced in the 1928 elections, had just delivered a speech touting selective infanticide. Then it flew east to Frankfurt, where a Jewish woman named Edith Frank was caring for her newborn, a girl named Anne. Sailing northeast, the Zeppelin crossed over Russia. Siberian villagers, so isolated that they'd never even seen a train, fell to their knees at the sight of it. On August 19th, as some 4 million Japanese waved handkerchiefs and shouted Banzai, the Zeppelin circled Tokyo and sank onto a landing field. 4 days later, as the German and Japanese anthems played, the ship rose into the grasp of a typhoon that whisked it over the Pacific at breathtaking speed toward America. Passengers, gazing from the window, saw only the ship's shadow, following it along the clouds, like a huge shark swimming alongside. When the clouds parted, the passengers glimpsed giant creatures turning in the sea that looked like monsters. On August 25th, the Zeppelin reached San Francisco. After being cheered down the California coast, it slid through sunset into darkness and silence and across midnight. As slow as the drifting wind, it passed over Torrance, where its only audience was a scattering of drowsy souls, among them the boy in his pajamas, behind the house, on Gramercy Avenue. Standing under the airship, his feet bare in the grass, he was transfixed. It was, he would say, fearfully beautiful. He could feel the rumble of the craft's engines tilling the air, but couldn't make out the silver skin, the sweeping ribs, the finned tail. He could see only the blackness of the space it inhabited. It was not a great presence, but a great absence, a geometric ocean of darkness that seemed to swallow heaven itself.